From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, Governor Cuomo begins his third term with a speech from Ellis Island. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on the political challenges facing the governor in the new year. And we'll take a look back at some of the top stories around the state in 2018. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Governor Andrew Cuomo began his third term in office this week with a speech at the historic site of Ellis Island, where the ancestors of millions of Americans arrived as immigrants in the 19th and 20th centuries. He focused much of his speech not on state issues, but instead on what he sees as the nation's problems, and said New York will lead the fight against them. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt has more.
Cuomo, who spoke at the site where his own ancestors immigrated to America, says his grandparents were the people at the southern border today. The governor says President Donald Trump's own grandfather, Frederick Trump, also came to this country through Ellis Island. Without mentioning Trump again by name, Cuomo told the crowd gathered in sight of the Statue of Liberty in New York's harbor that we live in a time of great global and national unrest. And he said the federal government is committing malfeasance for, among other things, shutting down the government. New York State is paying $65,000 a day to keep the two national historic sites open.
The federal government may shut itself down, but it will never extinguish the Statue of Liberty's torch. It will never erase the words of her poem. They will never close our harbor.
Cuomo says the greatest threat the nation faces, though, is what he calls a threat from within, and the growing divisions among Americans that he says has led to anti-Semitism, misogyny, and xenophobia.
It is impossible to overstate how dangerous, how malignant this condition is. It is like a cancer that is spreading throughout our society. A disease that causes one cell in the body politic to attack other cells.
The governor says in New York he will try to remedy some of those ills with a first 100 days agenda that he calls the most progressive in the state's history.
From voting reforms to Roe v. Wade for New York to protecting a woman's right to choose to better gun laws, to health care protection, to legalizing marijuana.
The speech was preceded by a video that could serve as an introduction to Cuomo as a politician for those who might not know him. It featured excerpts of speeches and remarks from Cuomo over the past decades, as well as his father, the late former Governor Mario Cuomo, and other family friends. It also included a list of his accomplishments and praise and endorsements from national figures like former President Bill Clinton, who Andrew Cuomo worked for as Secretary, and Vermont Senator and former Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders.
What Governor Cuomo is proposing is a revolutionary idea for higher education.
Cuomo has said repeatedly that he's not running for president in 2020. The state's next attorney general, Letitia James, was also sworn in. James makes history in two ways as the first woman and first African-American woman to serve as the attorney general. Former AG Eric Schneiderman resigned last May after allegations he physically assaulted several women that he dated. James also spoke of righting the wrong she sees in society.
We see corruption eating away at the bedrock of our society, and too often we feel powerless to respond. But today, my friends, we take that power back.
Also sworn in, State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli. He's serving a third full term in office. And Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul to serve a second term as New York's Lieutenant Governor. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, you made some big news, not only around the state, but around the country. You talked to the governor about his inaugural address at Ellis Island and his continued attacks on President Trump, as well as his thoughts on the coming 2020 presidential race and other subjects. Made big news.
Well, you know, David, that was an interesting conversation. The governor came on, and one of the things that he said is, okay, if they're going to investigate me, I'll investigate them. So here we go. Control of the Senate by the Democrats will make a whole difference in the way in which he approaches things. Look, I've always been one. I'm not going to change my story now. Who believes that the governor has been very helpful to the Republicans staying in power? He's very proud of the fact that he could negotiate with them, but he could negotiate with them because, you know, their continued existence was at his hands. So that's one of the things he's going to have to play with. And there were many other things that occurred yesterday, David. One of them was his endorsement of Joe Biden, basically saying he should win because he's prepared, because he's been in the co-pilot seat for years, and he knows his stuff, and that basically I'm assuming that he's talking about the moderate wing of the Democratic Party. And I'm thinking, as he speaks about all of this, that this governor is fully aware that if Biden falls, well, maybe he'll run for president. We don't really know. Our friend Chris Churchill made that point in a column in the Albany Times Union. The other point is, when I asked him whether he would accept the vice presidency, David, he said, I have other things to think about right now. Where I come from, that's a yes, because after all, Biden will be quite old, and being vice president would put you in a position to win all the marbles.
Alan, you just referenced investigations. The governor says he'll investigate those who investigate him. A name that rises to the top is James Skoufis. He's a state senator, Democrat, and he's
young man.
Just hired a bipartisan team of staff in his Albany offices as a full-time investigative unit. Here we go.
Well, yeah. You know, third terms are very hard for people. I think it's partially an explanation why he's reaching out to so many people, why he's doing things that he hasn't done before. We're delighted that he comes on WAMC and makes national news and statewide news when he does it. But he's nobody's fool. I mean, he knows that he has to get rid of the third term curse, which has plagued so many people, his father, George Pataki, and others. And so here comes Skoufis. He says, I'm a young man. I'm going to make my wings the same way Teddy Roosevelt did it. Simply, I'm going to clean things up, and maybe he will if he finds something. But as the governor points out, you know, he's a pretty fierce competitor. I don't know that I'd like to be on the other side of him, although I suspect I have been in the past.
Is it possible, Alan, that things could grind to a halt in some ways and things won't get done and then there's no one to blame?
No, I think, let's face it, we do know a little bit about Andrew Cuomo. We know that he is, after all, a thinking politician, but he is a moderate. You know, that's why he was able to play with the Republicans as well as he did for all of those years. And he got a great deal out of them, let's face it. But there are people in the party who are going to be to his left, and they're going to be pushing him like crazy. Now, if there's one thing we know about this governor and that he's proud of is, quote, he gets things done. So this isn't the guy who's going to say my way or the highway. It's not going to be a Donald Trump situation. He'll make his deals when he has to do it. And he has been playing a much more progressive role in the Democratic Party because clearly he has his eyes set on something else.
Well, from that to some of the top stories that have risen to top of mind during the last year, our correspondents, both Allison Dunn and Pat Bradley, taking a look back at the year and some of the things that made news. And one of the top stories, if not in our state of New York, but in the world, is the environment, climate change, and Alan, water contamination, some of the things that we've seen now with PFOA and PFOS, as well as the reopening up of whether GE has to do more cleanup of the Hudson River, this constant issue of water and water contamination.
Well, that's right. We thought we had a lot of this cleaned up in previous years with the federal government playing a leading role and Congress playing a leading role. Now it turns out not so much. Or, put another way, maybe a lot, but not enough. There's no way that we can justify our children drinking chemicals that are left over from plants. There's no way that General Electric should be let off the hook for all their pollution of the river. And we know that because some people drink out of that river one way or the other. So we know that this is not a good situation. And let it be clear that we have a president of the United States who has not exactly been aggressive when it comes to the environment, quite the opposite. So something has to be done, and it will be done because mothers and fathers will not put up with the idea that their children are going to be severely hurt by drinking this impure water. We've tried to do it in the past. It needs to be done again. I would be sure that this would be an appropriate thing for the newly constituted Democratic House of Representatives to put on the table in part of their negotiating strategy.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartan. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A controversial heated campaign in New York's 19th congressional district was the talk of the town in 2018, and environmental sagas, including over Newburgh's PFOS water contamination, continued in New York's Hudson Valley. But there was plenty else grabbing attention as well. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn.
In January, women's marches continued following their 2017 kickoff. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, during his State of the State speech, raised the prospect of building a tunnel between Long Island and Westchester, an idea the state dropped in June. Cuomo and state lawmakers also began fighting back against a new federal tax law that caps state and local tax or SALT deductions at $10,000.
We believe it is illegal, and we will challenge it in court as unconstitutional.
But some lawmakers were concerned about how to proceed in uncharted waters. Democratic primary candidates in the 19th congressional district began their campaigns to take on Republican freshman John Faso in what remained a nationally watched seat. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency said it would work with the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation to evaluate sediment samples from the Upper Hudson River ahead of any decision about whether General Electric's PCB cleanup is complete. DEC Commissioner Basil Sagos.
Listen, very importantly, EPA should not deem the project complete. The dredging project is not complete.
Sagos reiterated these comments in December. In February, doors opened at Resorts World Catskills, a $1.2 billion casino in Sullivan County, where Charles Deglioni is executive vice president.
The resurgence of Sullivan County and the Catskills starts today.
However, the casino has experienced financial struggles. New York State officials were in Newburgh to update city residents and officials on the testing timeline and procedure for a new PFOS carbon filtration system. Residents sounded off about health concerns following the state's first round of a PFOS blood testing program. In March, powerful winter storms left parts of the region in the dark. Both state and local lawmakers endeavored to get to the bottom of why area utility companies took so long to respond to the outages. There was a state Senate hearing on storm response and preparedness, for starters, and the State Department of Public Service held hearings in April. Also in April, Republican Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro kicked off his campaign for governor.
I know we can restore New York, and I am running for governor to make our government more accountable and our state more accessible and affordable for its people.
Two Democratic pillars of the Hudson Valley community lost their battles to cancer the same day, April 15th. Newburgh Mayor Judy Kennedy died from ovarian cancer, while New York State Assemblyman Frank Skartatos died from pancreatic cancer. Newburgh community activist Omari Shakur says he and Kennedy evolved to a meeting of the minds.
She didn't pull no punches. She told you how it was and what she was here for. Like I said, we didn't never have a plan, but we had a vision. And she stayed true to that vision till the very end. She stayed true to it.
Democratic 18th District Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney paid his respects to Kennedy and Scartatos.
He was a bulldog for what he thought was right, and he was always sticking up for people who were shut out and who didn't have everything lined up for him in this world. And I loved working with him, and we're going to miss him a lot. He was a great, decent, passionate, honest public servant.
In a special election, Democratic Assemblywoman Shelley Mayer defeated Republican Julie Killian for the 37th District State Senate seat, left vacant after Democrat George Latimer became Westchester County Executive. And after serving 20 years in the state Senate, Republican John Bonasic of the 42nd District announced he would retire. In November, his seat turned blue with the victory of Rosendale Councilmember Jen Metzger. Then, an even longer time Hudson Valley state lawmaker announced he, too, would not seek re-election, Republican Bill Larkin of the 39th District. Later in May, Democratic State Assemblyman James Skoufis kicked off his campaign to run for Larkin's seat, which he won in November. In June, New York State said it was suing six manufacturers of hazardous firefighting foam that contained the dangerous chemicals PFOA and/or PFOS, the latter which was the contamination culprit in Newburgh's drinking water. And seven Democratic primary candidates kicked their campaigns into high gear ahead of the June 26th primary. Voters selected Antonio Delgado of Rhinebeck to run for the 11-county swing district.
I want us to believe in our power. Believe in our power. Okay? And we will see this thing through. I love you.
He defeated Congressman Faso, the Green Party's Steve Greenfield, and Independent Diane Neal.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
To the North Country and the Adirondacks, where a number of issues flared during 2018, the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley takes a look back.
Relations between the city and town of Plattsburgh were strained over the course of 2018. In March, the city sued the town, claiming that a payment in lieu of taxes agreement had been violated and the city was owed more than $1 million. County Legislative Deputy Chair Bobby Hall called the lawsuit ridiculous.
A lawsuit over a Falcon Seaboard is not the answer. I do not even know who's right and who's wrong because it happened so long ago. But this is not the way to go.
Tensions increased in August when Mayor Colin Reed suggested annexation of town land adjacent to the city. He said obtaining taxable properties is critical for the city's survival.
Our future can't be dictated by artificial lines on maps. We have to look for places to develop, and we expect and assume we're going to have cooperation to do so.
But in early December, town supervisor Michael Cashman said a formal petition from the city had not yet been received.
It's going to require public hearings. Those public hearings have not been scheduled yet, largely because the city of Plattsburgh has not given the town of Plattsburgh the formal petition. It seemed as though the city was very anxious in getting this moving forward, and yet here we sit, waiting.
The city of Plattsburgh made international headlines when leaders decided in March to place an 18-month moratorium on new cryptocurrency operations. Mayor Colin Reed.
This isn't because we're Luddites. It isn't because we're afraid of cryptocurrency. We have a fixed resource, and unlike some other communities that the Bitcoiners are going to, where they can simply buy more power, we don't have that. We've got 104 megawatts. We've got a fixed amount.
There were significant changes in the Adirondacks as the final classification for the Boreas Ponds land acquisition was made by the Adirondack Park Agency and the DEC. Dan Plumley with Adirondack Wild was guarded about the plans.
Their UMPs were somewhat deficient, but they did offer a ray of hope in recognizing the need for what's called wildland monitoring plans.
The New York State Department of Environmental Conservation started restricting parking in some higher use areas of the Adirondacks. Adirondack Association of Towns and Villages President Matt Simpson hoped the newly acquired lands and the redevelopment of the former frontier town will disperse visitors to other areas of the park.
I think we're going to hopefully be able to show people there's many other places within the Adirondack Park that they should visit.
In November, the first episode of Ben Stiller's long-awaited Showtime miniseries portraying the Dannemora prison escape premiered in Plattsburgh.
What was interesting to me was the fact that
these two inmates that actually pulled off this escape in 2015 that seemed like something that, you know, would have happened 20 or 30 or 40 years ago.
In June, Ted Rakaab won a Democratic primary for the 21st Congressional District that had seen up to 10 candidates. Incumbent Republican Elise Stefanik easily won re-election in the general.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. What was a stunning tragedy with ripple effects across New York and the country was the death of 20 people in a limo crash in Schoharie in October. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas recalls what may be the biggest upstate news story of the year.
The afternoon of October 6, 2018, a stretch limousine packed with revelers headed to a 30th birthday party ran a stop sign at the junction of New York State Routes 30 and 30A and slammed into an SUV parked outside a store before coming to rest in a nearby field. Officials called it the deadliest transportation accident in the country in 9 years. 20 people died, 17 relatives and friends in the limo, its driver, and two pedestrians run down in the parking lot of the Apple Barrel Country Store in Schoharie. The following Tuesday evening, a massive candlelight vigil was held in Amsterdam, 25 miles north of the crash site, home to many of the victims, as well as Congressman Paul Tonko.
Amsterdam is my home and hometown. I've always known it to be a loving community. As I gather with you this evening, I see it manifested in a very powerful expression. Look at the bridge, filled with people. The walkways filled with people. To the family members, know your loved ones are loved by their community.
The next day, 28-year-old Nauman Hussein, the limousine company operator, was charged with criminally negligent homicide. New York State Police Superintendent George Beach.
Hussein, the operator of Prestige Limo in Saratoga County, was issued written violations by the New York State Police and the New York Department of Transportation that the driver he hired should not have been operating the type of vehicle involved in Saturday's crash. Also, that vehicle was placed out of service by the Department of Transportation in September of this year and should not have been on the road.
Nauman pleaded not guilty. His father, Shahed Hussein, owns the company. Albany activist Lynn Jackson.
I'm so sad about what happened in Schoharie. Schoharie is a small place. FBI informant Shahed Hussein, who owns the limousine company, he was arrested around 2001 for 80 felonies at the Department of Motor Vehicles. Had he been prosecuted and deported at that time, probably none of this would have ever happened. But instead, he became an informant for the FBI.
Hussein, last known to be living in Pakistan, was involved in the arrests of Albany imam Yasin Aref and pizza shop owner Mohammed Hussein, along with the terrorism case involving the so-called Newburgh Four. Speaking on the eve of 2019, Schoharie Town Supervisor Alan Taverner says they're still waiting for NTSB investigation results.
Right now, we don't really know any more than we did a week or so after it happened, unfortunately. Fundraising for the memorials is proceeding. Folks still stop by there. You still drive by every once in a while and see somebody coming to visit the site where it happened.
Amsterdam Mayor Michael Villa says the community is still grieving 3 months later.
This will be with us for a long, long time. A tragedy that touched so many lives and changed so many lives. The city has reached out to many of the families and just try to be supportive as we can in whatever efforts we can do to ease that burden.
Several of the families are moving ahead with lawsuits. NTSB officials say they still have not been able to fully examine the limousine.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
And And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1901, or just listen to our podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.